Soft War, and everyone else must fail. Speak, Oracle by Adam Cohen. Softwell ran intimate portrait of Larry Ellison and Oracle. By Matthew Simons with commentary by Larry Ellison. Illustrated. 500 APP New York, Simon and Schuster. $28. Everyone else must fail. The unvarnished truth about Oracle and Larry Ellison. By Karen Southwick. 306 PP New York, Crown Business. $27.50. Who can't have the job? Larry. With that email message, Larry Ellison informed a California computer consultant named Michael Murdoch, 2 days before Christmas 1997, that he was being named the chief executive of Apple Computers. But Ellison, a member of Apple's board, and his pal Steve Jobs were just having some mean-spirited fun. Murdoch was later told, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, that it was all a joke, and if he showed up at Apple he would be asked to leave, and if he did not, would be arrested. The Apple CEO prank is one of countless Ellison tales eagerly traded in Silicon Valley of business associates humiliated, of high-level employees unceremoniously dumped, of wives and girlfriends left behind that have earned the software billionaire a reputation for some of the jerkiest behavior in the business world. But Ellison is also a college dropout, who, by smarts and sheer force of will, built Oracle into a technology behemoth and briefly, by some accounts, passed his arch-rival Bill Gates, to become the world's richest person. Ellison's life has the makings of a great biography. But the burden is to capture both of Ellison's sides, the brilliant dreamer and the cold-hearted schemer. Two new biographies have arrived, one based on unprecedented access to Ellison, the other largely on interviews with disgruntled former employees. Both books are illuminating. Still, it's too bad the authors didn't collaborate, because taken together, the more than 800 pages they have produced add up to a fascinating character study. Ellison was born on the Lower East Side, in 1944, to a Jewish teenager and an Italian-American Air Force pilot, to whom she was not married. Unable to raise him on her own, she gave him up to an aunt in Chicago. Ellison grew up believing that his great-aunt Lillian was his mother, and her husband, Louis, his father. Louis Ellison never tired of telling his adoptive son he would come to nothing. For much of Ellison's early life, he seemed resolved to proving him right. After a lackadaisical high school career, he treaded water at the University of Illinois and the University of Chicago, and then headed west. Ellison began as a programmer, but quickly got the entrepreneurial bug. While working for a data storage company, he met two other programmers he wanted to go into business with. All their company needed was a product. Ellison stumbled on relational database theory, which held that, if data could be stored in computers in a less hierarchical way, it would be easier to find and use. IBM was doing pioneering research on the subject, but doubted relational databases were commercially viable. Ellison put together a prototype, and made his first sale to the CIA. IBM was wrong, and Ellison was right. Relational databases were the future, and Ellison's company, which by now had the forward-looking name Oracle, was on the cutting edge. After winning some marquee name clients, Navy Intelligence and the National Security Agency were early purchasers, Oracle had a successful initial public offering. In 1986, Ellison, who declared a war on complexity, turned Oracle into a world leader in producing software that runs large organizations. Oracle is not a household name, because consumers are rarely the end users of its software, but anyone who has bought a book on Amazon or placed a bid on eBay has relied on its technology. Over the next few years, Oracle found itself not only on the cutting edge of data storage technology, but often on what Silicon Valley calls the bleeding edge, the point where innovation leads to embarrassing, costly failures. Oracle, these books tell us, acquired a reputation for selling software not yet ready for use, and for blaming customers when things went wrong. In the early 1990s, those and other mistakes caught up with Oracle. In the first quarter of 1991, it reported a $36 million loss, and was forced to restate its financial results. Its market cap fell by $3 billion, and it laid off 10% of its domestic workforce. In 1992, Oracle brought in Ray Lane, a consultant, to head up United States sales. Lane, who went on to become the company's president, was shocked to hear stories of customers calling to complain about bad software and getting answers like "Bummer, dude." While Lane was reworking operations and ramping up the sales division, Ellison focused on the big picture. In the mid-1990s, when Microsoft was still not seeing the Internet's importance, Ellison pushed Oracle to switch over to web-based data storage software. It was a brilliant move, and Oracle rode the Internet to new heights. Ellison was now appearing on magazine covers and gaining celebrity for competing in the America's Cup. But despite Lane's important contributions, eventually he, too, would be gone, the most prominent of a long line of executives forced out with little explanation. Matthew Simons, the political editor of The Economist, wrote his book, Soft War, with Ellison's cooperation, and the access he got is apparent. This can sound like fun. The next day we're in London, at his favorite hotel, the Lanesborough, Simons writes at one point. More important, this access gives the reader a rare window on Ellison's mind. Speaking of his three failed marriages, he says ruefully, "There's a criminal law in California called three strikes, and you're out. Maybe, after three marriages, you shouldn't be allowed a fourth." Simons is adept at the technology and provides gritty detail on the relative merits of various types of database geekery. The book employs an odd but effective technique of allowing Ellison to comment on the text in footnotes. A few of Ellison's interpositions take genuine issue. When Tom Siebel, one of Oracle's most successful sales managers, is quoted saying he left in part because of Oracle's deficient ethical standards, Ellison rejoins that he left because he thought the big money days were over. Other footnotes are offbeat, like Ellison's unhappy memory of having to rename his boat because journalists kept pointing out that the Shintodietis name, spelled backward, is "I'm a Nazi." But Ellison's critics may find that the text does not give Ellison enough to object to. Simons is generally willing to give his subject the benefit of the doubt, or to assume he has grown as a person since his worst behavior. Ellison's newfound sensitivity would come as news to, say, the employees of PeopleSoft. When Ellison announced a hostile takeover bid for his software rival last summer, there were widespread reports that he intended to scrap all of its products. He was interested in acquiring its customer base and fire many of its 12,000 employees. Karen Southwick's book Everyone Else Must Fail is, as its title suggests, squarely in the "if you have nothing nice to say, pull up a chair" school. Southwick, a technology journalist, builds her Ellison portrait in large part on the diatribes of people he has shoved aside. Readers looking for sinister snapshots will not be disappointed. At one conference, Southwick reports, Ellison displayed a photograph of a rival company's headquarters and told his sales staff, "We are going to run them out of business, and buy that building, which we're going to bulldoze. After that, we'll salt the earth. Then we'll go after their families." Her account is shorter, however, on descriptions of what Oracle's software does. Information Simons offers an abundance and appreciation of the genius that went into building such a dominant company. Oracle has been going through a rough spell in the last few years. That could be because of September 11th and the weak economy, but Southwick argues that Ellison's combative nature may finally be catching up with the company. With the complexity of the technology world and the unavoidable requirement to forge into relationships with partners, customers, even competitors, Southwick asks, does Ellison's shortcoming now become a fatal flaw? Ellison's competitiveness and aggression may have helped Oracle get where it is today, but in thinking about whether they are a long-term strategy, he may want to contemplate the most famous prophecy of his company's namesake. When King Croesus wanted to attack neighboring Persia, he consulted the Oracle of Delphi. If the king attacked, the Oracle said, he would succeed in destroying a mighty empire. Croesus did attack, and did destroy an empire his own. Adam Cohen writes editorials for The Times, and is the author of The Perfect Store, Inside Ebay,